Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Scott eVest. Whether you're a ghost hunter or a gadget guy like me, tons of pockets in your clothing just make everything better. To learn more, go to jimharold.com/vest. That's jimharold.com/vest and get a 20% discount. Thanks, Scott eVest.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you. And boy, we've got some great stories tonight from some of our favorite storytellers. And so glad to be back with you a couple days late, but we're here. And again, thank you so much over the years for your support. We're just honing in on the 10th anniversary of the Paranormal Podcast. That will be July 29th, and very excited about that. In fact, we're doing a special anniversary edition where I visit with some of my favorite all-time guests on the program, people like Jeff Belanger and Annie Wilder and Lloyd Auerbach, who was actually our first guest, Micah Hanks and Clayton Morris. It's going to be a lot of fun, so stay tuned for that. And if you want to listen to that whole back catalog going back to 2005, check out my Plus Club at jimharold.net. It's a great time to do so. We have a special summer sale going on, so you get some big savings. And I know we're over 1,000 episodes over there now. So really, if you love these shows, if you love the campfire, want to hear all that back catalog, I have people all the time say, oh, I've only been listening for a month. So that means there are a lot of you out there. There are hundreds of campfire shows, plus a lot more over at jimharold.net. And again, great time to get in with that summer sale. Well, with no further ado, we are going to get on to these great campfire stories. Well, we're joined by Mindy. She's calling us from the American South, and she's been listening, for about 9 months. A coworker said, hey, check this guy out, and she enjoys the shows and read the book. So we're very appreciative. And I remember, I think this may be years ago, we had somebody come on and talk about a haunted museum. And it looks like Mindy has her own story of this sort. We're so glad to have her with us. Mindy, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for having me. Well, while I was in graduate school, I had the plum opportunity of getting a job at the Historical Society in the city where I was going to school. Mm-hmm. And I love history. It turned out not to be my major in college, but I absolutely love it. And it was on Saturdays, working during the summer, and then on into the school year. So perfect for the last 6 months that I would be in school. Basically, I went in for the interview, and the place, I loved it. I felt this really amazing energy, and it was kind of creepy and perfect. Loved it. So it turned out it was an old church, which made it even more inviting for me. The architecture was beautiful. The exhibits had a lot to do with the Wild West and a lot to do with a lot of religious aspects. The city where I went to school was very religious, a lot of Catholic influences. So there's a lot of mysticism that goes along with all those things. So compounding that with my interest in the paranormal and history, it was a perfect fit. So one very warm July afternoon, my friend and I were getting ready to open up the museum. It was just she and I, both girls in our 20s, getting ready to open it up, getting ready for the day. It was about 1:45 in the afternoon, bright light streaming in through the gorgeous windows. And we were standing in the foyer, just getting ready to kind of open up the gift shop, open up the doors. And way down the hall to our right was the basement. And we were standing there talking about gossipy girl things that you usually do.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we heard what sounded like a baby crying down the hallway. Now, we were the only people in the museum. Even though it's a big area, we were the only ones there. Hadn't opened yet. And we kind of stopped and looked at each other, and we thought, well, maybe it's a cat. Maybe somehow a cat got in. Very kind of strange, but kind of stopped, looked at each other. Let's go check it out. So I let her go first because I wanted her to be witness to whatever it was that we would see down there, cat or not. And we headed down the hallway, just, it started to fade out a little bit after that, and then it stopped. And so we go all the way down to the basement. And down in the basement, various tables were laid out. There were various archives, as you can imagine. In a historical society, people donate things all the time that are maybe not relevant. So all kinds of things, papers, pencils, everything laid out. We kind of got to snooping around the stacks a little bit. And there on the table was an old tombstone that a farmer had brought in, that he had found in his field when he was turning up, getting ready to plant. And we looked at each other, and we looked at the tombstone, and the tombstone was dated just 1 year, something like August of 1878 to August of 1879. It was a baby. It was a baby's tombstone. And it was very poignant and very sad. And we wondered, you know, what was that, totally coincidence? What was that all about? But anyway, right. We were left kind of scratching our heads and left in a little bit of reverence for that. That was the only real experience that I'd had in that museum, but my friend had had more. She had seen things in the basement. And like I said, it just kind of had that feeling to it. Just kind of, I never felt like I was completely alone when I was in there. I right. felt watched from time to time. And so I don't know. It was just kind of one of those things that left us scratching our heads. But it has stuck with me for well over 18 years. So I just wanted to share that with your listeners and kind of let them draw their own conclusions. But it's been a story that's meant something to me all this time.
Well, like you, I have a fascination for history, and it was not my major in college, although I could have seen it being my major. But I've always felt, particularly when it comes to artifacts, that you feel like if you have a loved one who has passed and you have an object of theirs, a lot of times you can touch that object, see that object, be around that object, and you feel the presence. Now, again, that could be a psychological trick. You know, you associate that object with the person. But I tend to think, no, I think that there's a little bit of their essence there. And particularly if this, you know, young child, 1 year old, and I know in the olden days, it was very common for children to die at birth or very young, different, the influenza epidemic, all the different things have happened throughout history. This was more common than it is today. So yeah, it just kind of reeks of tragedy and it's just a really interesting story. And I thank you so much for thinking of us first and listening, and tell your friend, I don't know who your friend is, but whoever he or she is, say thank you. Jim says thank you. And thank you for tuning into The Campfire.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jim. And I look forward to more stories.
Rose from Oregon is with us today, and she's going to share, based on her description, what I have in front of me, one of the more unique dream stories that we've heard. And I'm so glad that she's coming on the show to share it with us. Rose, welcome, and please tell us what happened.
Thank you. Well, this was back in 1999. I was a college student in Vermont and had just started school. And I had a good friend there, one of the only people I really spent time at the school with. And we were really into dreams. And both of us, we'd always talk about dreams together and talk about lucid dreaming. We were really into that kind of stuff. And since it was more of a jockey kind of school, she and I were more of the more creative types. We hung together and bonded really well with her. Unfortunately, about a month into being at the school, I lost my father to a heart attack. But it's the story that kind of led up to that I called to share with you today. When I was, I would say this is probably two or three nights before my father passed, I was dreaming, and this woman at the time who I was friends with was walking with me in the dream through a cemetery. Mm-hmm. And the cemetery in my dream was one that was actually really familiar, one that I had kind of grown up with in the church I grew up in. And it was right next to that church, and it was an old way in Boston, went way back to like the Revolutionary War. And I used to love running through there when I was a kid. So it was a familiar place to me. It wasn't terribly scary. And in that cemetery, there was always these old, I guess you call them tombs, where there were these big iron doors, you know, sealing them shut.
Right.
And as a kid, I was always kind of, you know, gosh, I never want to go in one of those. So in this dream, she and I are wandering, and I see somebody fed into the hillside in the cemetery, and one is cracked open fairly big, and she's birth going in. I'm like, no, let's not do that. I don't want to go in there. And she lingers at the door, and all of a sudden she transforms. She's no longer my friend. She morphs kind of like in a Michael Jackson video.
Oh my.
into I guess what I always described as a tall man that looked like Abraham Lincoln with like a frilly cravat and a tall black hat and, you know, just kind of like dead zombie skin, but also kind of looked African American. And he said, Don't worry, it's okay. I used your friend as a way to kind of get you familiar and okay and comfortable with this. He's like, I'm not here to scare you. And I was like, oh, okay. And he said, let's go for a walk. And he took me for a walk through the cemetery and started explaining to me kind of the importance of death and life and how it has to happen, but that there's this kind of purpose to it. And that, gosh, you know, I wish I'd written all of it down because, of course, that's stuff that we all want to kind of understand and know. But I felt like when I woke up from that I, like a peacefulness. And it wasn't scary at all, but it was when my dad did pass a couple of days later, I already kind of had this, I was devastated, of course, but I really feel like what was given to me in that dream really pushed me through.
Wow.
The experience.
And about the nature of death, what you said that the figure was in your email, explained the nature of death. What kind of things did it try to relate to you?
It's the kind of thing where, like, I don't remember word for word, but I feel like what the message was, you know, you can't have the life without the death. It's the way the universe kind of evolved. It's, and the good thing is there is, I feel like he was saying to me, like, there is life beyond that, you know, here I am speaking to you. And I think he appeared to me the way he did because, you know, it was obvious he was from another time and that he was, you know, still some kind of essence, some kind of spirit. And I think him being that way was also kind of the part of the lesson, like he's still there after, you know, being around for a long time himself. So it was, I think that was the takeaway was, you know, it's scary. It's the unknown, it's terrifying, but you come through it and there's stuff that comes out of it.
Well, Rose, it's a very poignant story, very personal. I thank you for listening. You've been listening for about a week, and if I remember correctly, but you've really brought something to stick with us on this campfire, and I thank you so much for joining us today.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Scott eVest. Whether you're a ghost hunter or a gadget guy like me, tons of pockets in your clothing, well, they just make everything better. And I'm going to tell you how to discover the power of pockets and save a ton in the process. Now, when I first learned of Scott eVest, my first reaction was, what a great thing for people like me who love gadgets, because my frustration is that there's never anywhere to put the darn things. But then I thought of my ghost hunting friends. Could there be anything better to accompany investigators with all of their meters and gadgets on their ghost hunts than Scott eVest clothing? Because pockets equal freedom. Now, Scott eVest is a clothing company with a difference. They believe in the power of pockets. For example, the Quest vest that I have, it has a phenomenal 42 pockets that can fit everything from mobile phones to a full-size tablet to water bottles, gadgets, cables, really anything else you can think of. Plus, they're about a lot more than vests. Scott eVest carries a full line of pocket-powered clothing for men and women. And a lot of things great for this time of year. You know, it's not just about the fall and winter. There's great stuff for the summer. There's hidden cargo shorts, the pack jacket, the Lucy Lucille, Q-zips, T-shirts, boxers. If they can sew a plethora of pockets into it, they've got it. They even have sport jackets, which I found amazing. So I've got a deal for you. If you'd like to save 20% on your Scott eVest purchase, go to jimharold.com/vest. That's jimharold.com/vest. Click on the link that I provide there and use the coupon code JimHerald, that's with no spaces, one word, JimHerald, and you'll get 20% off your purchase. What a deal! Discover the power of the pocket. Go to JimHerald.com/vest, that's JimHerald.com/vest, and click on the link again that I provide and use the coupon code JimHerald, that's one word, and you'll get 20% off your purchase. Thanks, Scott Evest.
If you love these great ghost stories, please tell a friend about Jim Harold's Campfire today. Now, we return to the show.
One of our favorite listeners and storytellers is back on the Campfire. We're talking about Sandy from California. You'll remember her from such classic tales as the Bull Moose Jackson tale from, gosh, that's got to be 2009. She's been with us from the very beginning, and she's a Plus Club member. She's done artwork for us. She's really been a great supporter and always talking about marketing strategies and things. She's very smart in that area as well. So really appreciate all of her input. And tonight she's going to share two stories. One is from a friend about a haunted house and the other is about a haunted train. Well, Sandy, welcome back to the program as always.
Well, thank you, and so happy to pollute your airways.
Well, you do a very good job. You pollute them very positively.
Thank you.
So tell us a story about your friend in the haunted house.
Okay. Well, this was a really good friend that I used to work with many years ago. And he was a great artist, a really smart guy. And we would go to lunch together all the time. I just have to preface this so you understand the nature of this person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we would talk about all kinds of things, science and whatever. But I never brought up the subject of the paranormal or like my Bull Moose story and things like that, right? Because I kind of thought he would like laugh at me, you know. And so I kind of, you know, stayed away from that subject. But, you know, finally one day I just had to ask, because it's such a big part of my life, this crazy stuff that happens to me.
Right.
And so I asked him, like, well, you know, well, what do you think about, you know, ghosts? Do you think they're real, or what do you, you know? And he just like looked at me and said, you know, I do believe in ghosts. I've had an experience. And I was like, ooh, I said, do tell. <You know? laughs> So he tells me this story that I'll relate to you now. And I'm trying to remember it the best I can. I am old, you know. But him and a few of his friends, they were going out to the woods to just explore and muck around and so on and so forth. Now I don't remember if they were going to this particular place because that house was there, or because they just happened upon this place. But they come upon this place, and it's one of those houses that's up on stilts,
right?
You know, kind of. And I don't know if it was up on stilts because it was like a hunting cabin, you know, where like sometimes like hunters would get up high so that they can scope out deer and whatnot, or if it was a floodplain of some sort that it needed to be up high. But it was definitely a very abandoned old place, and I don't know if there was a ladder or steps that led up to it, but you know, they clambered up in there, and you know, they're just, you know, checking it out, and basically it's just, you know, four walls and nothing there but a lot of, you know, garbage and busted up furniture, probably a lot of beer cans, and just, you know, a single light dangling from the ceiling, and basically that was it. You know, a couple broken windows. And so, you know, they just, you know, kind of explore a little bit, and they decide, well, you know, got to go, and the sun's starting to go down, so, you know, time to, you know, get out of here. So they, you know, exit the building. And he said, you know, they were a little bit ways off, and one of their, you know, one of his friends, you know, turned around and said, hey, look. And so they all stopped, and they looked to where he was looking. He's looking at the cabin, and here that light bulb was turned on and swinging back and forth in this building. And they're all like looking at each other like, did you do that? Did you, you know? And of course, they were so far away that at that point that it wouldn't have, even if somebody had swung it, it wouldn't have been swinging at that point. But they're like, there's no electricity going into that building. And so they said, well, let's, you know, my friend goes, let's check and make sure, because he's that kind of person. he's gonna rip it apart. And so they go back to the building. They're walking all, you know, underneath it and everything, looking for a ground wire coming up, because there's obviously no wire coming in from overhead.
Right.
And I and this guy, I'm telling you, when he says he was thorough, believe me, he was like a surgeon thorough. And he said, Sandy, I am telling you, there was no wire going into that place. There was no electricity being fed into that building.
You know, that's so funny, because I was just going over the campfire stories for the next book. And one of the stories involved a woman. I hate to give this away, but she's been on the campfire with this story. And she worked at her family's funeral home. And there's an instance, she wasn't there, but she was told of it, where there was literally a light shining. And it wasn't plugged in, a lamp. And somebody noticed it, one of the mourners, and said, oh, that lamp's not plugged in. And the owner, the mortician, got to thinking real quickly, and he said, oh, it's battery operated, because he didn't want to freak everybody out. But it wasn't.
I don't know. That kind of, you know, that would freak me out. And he said that his only regret was that he always wanted to go back there and really, you know, check it out. And I said, well, I guess they didn't go back to the building. They were too scared. And personally, I wouldn't even gone back to the house at all. I would have just said, okay, see you around. Sandy's going out. Got to go.
Now, next up, you have a haunted train. I do remember one call from Jean. You'll know her from the Plus Club. And where she felt, I believe, walking by where there had been a fatal train accident, this rush of strange cold air coming out of nowhere. And that was several years ago. She had that story. Other than that, I can't remember any haunted train stories, but it sounds like, leave it to Sandy. She has one. So tell us about it.
Okay. Well, this kind of was one of those things where I had some friends that were out visiting, and they wanted to tour the wine country a little bit out here in California. So we rented a house on Morro Bay, and the one friend, he was really into wines. I mean, like, he would read books on them and a total nerd about it. And he had, you know, built us a little itinerary, all the wineries we had to go to. So I'm allergic to wine, so I'm the perfect, like, designated driver. And so we were bopping around, you know, through this, you know, beautiful countryside, of course, and going from winery to winery. And it was kind of, you know, frankly, it was kind of boring for me, because I don't drink wine, but I was happy to do it for them. But we end up in the late afternoon on the first day, and we pulled up to this one winery, and it had three train cars there, all, you know, all connected beside the wine tasting building. And I was like, oh, cool, something for me to do, you know? So, you know, I really like trains and big engines and stuff like that. So, but it was just three cars.
Right.
So I was kind of really happy about it. And I, you know, as we're pulling up, I'm saying, you know, wonder if we're allowed to go, you know, in them. And sure enough, we get out of the car, and there's a sign, you know, kind of like, you know, proceed at your own risk kind of thing.
Right.
You know, don't smoke, and, you know, just be careful, and all that kind of stuff. So my one friend goes off and uses the facilities, and the other guy, he jumps in front of me and jumps onto the car first, and I'm like right behind him. And there was this poor little bird that got, I don't know if you, there were some windows that were kind of open. I don't know if the bird flew in the window or flew in the door, but this, you know, bird was frantically trying to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So my friend was kind of a bird person, so he kind of, you know, gently escorted the bird out. Well, of course, I jumped back outside, because I didn't want no bird flying around me. That was too much for me. And so he gets the bird out, and by the time he gets the bird out and I get back, get on the first car, he's already going into the, gone through the pass through and gone into the second car. So I'm, you know, just kind of, you know, checking out the train. I get about three quarters of the way through the train car, and all of a sudden the whole air changes. Like, it gets really heavy and oppressive. And almost like, you know, I walked into a sauna. Like, it just a feeling of compression. It was really strange. And and I thought, you know, was the dirty air in the car just getting to me, or, you know, I couldn't figure out what was really going on. And And it was so strange. I took another step and it got more intense. And this is so hard to explain. And this is probably something that psychics go through, but they can never really explain to normal people. But it wasn't like I heard the words. Mm-hmm. It was more like I felt an intention that somebody directed at me. And it was, the intention was, get out.
Ooh.
And I just kind of, you know, and I was like, you know, did I really hear that? Am I just imagining it? You know, so I'm like pondering, okay, what's really going on? And I just kind of shake it off. I take another step. And again, you know, was really, get out. And I'm like, okay. So I'm kind of looking around. Now this back, I was, like about a seat away from where the pass through is, and there was a chair, a bench, and then there was like a little table. And then I think there was another chair or another bench, you know, facing it. So it was kind of like, you know, if you were sitting there on the train, you could play cards with somebody. You know what I mean? It was like that kind of a thing.
Right.
And instinctively, I just looked to my left, and I was like, ooh, there's something nasty right there, you know? And this is really hard to explain, but it was like, when I was looking at that area with my physical eyes and I wasn't seeing anything, but in my mind, I could see three people sitting there.
Oh my goodness.
It's so hard to, it's really hard to kind of explain this so it makes sense to people, but it was a man and two women, and the women sitting there, like, were paying me no mind. Like, it was like they didn't know I was there. But this guy, he turned towards me and was looking straight. He squared on, dead straight at me. And I can recall their clothes. And the other thing that was really odd to me, I knew this train, this car, particular observation car, was built like in the 40s. But they were kind of dressed like more turn of the century.
Huh.
So, which was weird, but I realized later that one of the other cars was about that time frame. So maybe they shuffled up to first class. I don't know. But so anyway, so I'm seeing these people, but, you know, kind of not seeing them. It was the oddest thing that's ever happened to me in that respect. And this man, you know, I could describe him, he had dark, bushy eyebrows and a heavy, thick mustache. It kind of hung down past his lips. And he had these really dark, piercing eyes. And he was just, you know, staring at me like if he could have shot daggers out of his eyes, he would have been.
Like, what are you doing here? And yeah, get out.
And get out, you know. And the thing is, Jim, when I looked in his eyes, I mean, I know that in his former life, this guy was a stone-cold killer. There is no doubt in my mind. I mean, you could just, this was a very horrible, nasty person, just of not good intent. So,
oh my.
So it kind of freaked me out a little bit, but I just thought, well, I'll just walk past this guy really fast and go through the pass through because I wanted to see the rest of the train. And so I took another step forward and he says, just go. And I just went, okay, he can, you know, so I'm thinking he can read my mind. And so I just decided, you know, I apologized. I said, sorry for the intrusion. Didn't mean to interrupt. And I just started backing up slowly because for some weird reason, I just didn't feel safe exposing my back to him. I don't know, you know, why. It was just instinct, but so I just kept stepping back until I was out of that oppressive air, and as soon as I was out of it, I turned around and got as out of that car as fast as I could. So I'm out of the car at this point, about 10 feet. I get about 10 feet away, and I'm trying to shake this guy off because I don't want him coming home with me or anything, and I'm waiting for my friends. So the other friend that had gone to use facilities, he comes out and he comes up to me and says, I guess he figured I'd already gone through all three cars, you know? And he goes, you know, well, how was it? You know? And I just said, it's interesting. And the thing is, I have to tell you, is this person he's kind of like me. Like, he has experiences happen to him. He has seen ghosts and things like that. So I didn't want to say anything to him because I wanted to see if he was going to pick up on it, you know? So I'm watching him, you know, get into the car, and I'm watching him walk down, and I see him stop exactly where I was stopped at. And I went, uh-oh. You know? And sure enough, like, he stood there for like about 2 seconds, and he turns around and he runs out of that car, and he jumps out, and he runs up to me. He goes, "Did you feel that?" And I just start laughing. And I said, "Yeah, fun, wasn't it?" And he's going, "Oh my God." He goes, "I couldn't even go past it." I said, "Yeah, he wouldn't let me past either." Oh, he goes, my. "Holy crap." He goes, "Who is that?" And I said, "I don't know, but he's a nasty fella." And so we decided to wait for, you know, the other friend, Mr. Birdman, who saved the bird. You know, we're waiting for him to come out. And we decide we're not going to say anything to him because we want to see if he picked up on anything. But he comes up to us, and we just asked him, "Well, how'd you like it?" And he goes, "Oh, it was nice." So, you know, I guess he didn't pick up on it. Of course, he was chasing a bird out of there. But so then we decide that, you know, so we go in the boys want to do the wine tasting and all that kind of thing. And I go to the ladies' room, and because I don't drink the wine, I, you know, like, read history, or, you know, that, like, look at, you know, the
right
souvenirs and stuff like that. And so they finish up and you know, do their purchases, and we, you know, start tooling down the road, and I'm saying, you know, man, that train car was pretty freaky. And the Birdman is saying, he goes, "What was that all about?" And the other guy said, he goes, "Well, you know, didn't you hear what the guy serving us wine said?" And I said, "No, because I was, you know, out, you know, walking around and stuff." And they right. go, "Oh," he said, "Well, I asked him if had anybody ever said anything about the, you know, the train, had, you know?" And the guy said, "Oh yeah," he goes, "a couple people have said that first car is haunted."
No. Validation.
So I was like, wow, you know, because, like, I felt it, and my friend felt it, and then other people felt it. So if anybody ever wants to go, it's a winery in, God, where is it at? I can't remember now. It's in Paso Robles. I think it's used to be called Sylvester Wineries. It's I think it's called the La Vigne Winery now. So if you know, and if anybody goes, and you actually are psychic, I want you to find out who this person was, because I'd like to know.
There, so just, you, Sandy has laid down the assignment.
Lay down the assignment. Just put it on Jim's Facebook.
There, yeah. Let me know. Well, Sandy, always delightful to get your experiences, and you're such a great storyteller. And we thank you so much for being a part, as always, of the Campfire.
Thank you, Jim.
Jim here. I promise I won't take long. If you like the shows, please rate and review them. Write a little 2 or 3 sentence blurb over at iTunes. That really helps us, and we've not been asking enough. So if you do nothing else, write that review, rate us, because that gets us up on the charts. We bring new people in, and we get, guess what? More great Campfire stories. And here's one. Next up on the Campfire is Jonathan from Utah, and he's been listening for only 3 weeks now, and we're so glad to have him on the program, and he has a couple of stories he would like to share with us, one about the house he grew up with, and another one from his high school days. Jonathan, welcome to the program, and please share your stories.
So I actually grew up in Casper, Wyoming. Is where I'm from. And we moved into a house when I was 9 years old. There were some days, both my mom and my dad worked. I'm the youngest of five. And so sometimes my siblings would all be out of the house. My mom and dad would be out of the house. And it was a 3-story house. And there were some days where I would always be in the basement. That's where the big TV was. So, you know, about the time when I was probably 10 or 11, really started being at home alone a lot mm-hmm. more, and I'd be down in the basement, and the basement is right under the living room, dining room, which is right off the main entrance. And as I would be laying there watching TV, this house was built in 1921. So it's a very old house, lots of character. You can hear basically everything that goes on in it. So I'd be laying there watching TV, and I would hear the front door open, and I'd hear the screen open, and then I would hear the big, heavy wooden front door open and then close. And it closes very loudly. And I would hear someone walk across the living room into the dining room, you know, hearing the squeaks of the foot on the floor.
Right.
And they go into the kitchen, and they would reach where the stairs lead downstairs. It splits and goes downstairs and upstairs. And they would reach that spot right at the top of the stairs to come downstairs, and it would just stop. So, you know, me being the 10, 11-year-old that I was, I'd be like, hello, seeing if anybody was home, right? And nobody would answer. And I'd go upstairs, thinking that when my parents came home early, I'd go upstairs and nobody was there. But, oh, well, that was weird. So I go downstairs. About 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes later, I'd hear it again. The door open, door closed, footsteps across, into the kitchen, to the top of the stairs, and then nothing. I'd say, hello, go upstairs, nobody there. And this would happen 3, 4, 5 times in a row. And this happened regularly while I was growing up. And eventually I just got used to it. I'd hear the footsteps. I wouldn't even call out anymore because I knew that there was nobody there. And so I didn't really think too much of it until I was 21. I had been off for 2 years. I was serving a mission for my church, and I had just gotten back home. And my mom and I were talking about something, and she asked me, have you ever heard the ghost?
Hmm.
I was like, Mom, what are you talking about? And she goes, yeah, there'll be days I'll be downstairs doing laundry. Nobody else will be home. I'll be doing laundry, and I'll hear the front door open. I'll hear somebody walk across into the kitchen.
Yeah.
But nobody will be there. And I was like, oh my gosh, that happened to me all the time growing up. And it was so weird to hear my mom. She used the exact same words I did, but it only happened when she was home alone and she was down in the basement. Well, fast forward a few months, I got married. My wife and I, because we were super poor, lived in the upper level of my parents' home. And she was going to school, and she would come home early some days and be doing her homework and everything upstairs. And there was one day I came home, and I walk upstairs, and my wife looks at me and goes, the weirdest thing happened. I thought your dad came home early today. You know, I heard him come in the front door, which I thought was weird because he always comes in the back. But I heard him come in the front door and walk into the kitchen, and there was just nothing there. And I called for him, and he didn't answer. And I went downstairs, and there was nobody there. And it happened like 2 or 3 times.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that's our ghost. And my wife didn't take too kindly to that. She's not big into ghost stories, so she didn't think it was as funny as I did.
But I guess in a way, you know, scary, but good to get that validation.
You know, it wasn't anything scary. Even when I was a kid, it didn't, it never scared me. A lot of people talk about how they grew up in haunted houses. And even though we have some form of spirit there, I don't believe that our house, I wouldn't call it haunted. You know, we have a spirit who lives there, who is a part of that house, who has a routine that they like to go through. And that's about the end of it. You know, it never struck me as something that I should fear.
Now, that this isn't your only experience with a resident spirit, though. You also have a tale of where you went to high school, that there was someone who was known there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the high school I went to, it was built in 1905. Very old school. It's really cool looking. It looks like a castle. And when I was in high school, I was big into theater, musical theater especially. And there was a legend that dated back to the 1940s about a ghost that lived in the theater. Her name is Annabelle. And there have been many legends about her. Some say that she died that this girl, Annabelle, she was a student who did theater at NC. Some say she died when she fell off of the catwalk. Some say that she forgot her backpack in the theater one day and tried to climb in through the windows. There used to be windows on the side of the theater off from the wings, and that she tried climbing through the window and fell off and broke her neck. But the stories always talk about how when she died, she crawled off the stage into a certain seat. It was the center seat in the very front row, and that's where her spirit resides. Now, just for a little bit of clarification, no one ever died in the theater. She did not die in that seat. There was a girl named Annabelle who was a student at that time, but she actually died. She had a disease and died in the hospital a few miles away. So a lot of people try and discredit this because of that fact.
Right.
And a lot of people, they say that if anybody sits in seat 107, that the performance will be cursed. And there's a lot of stories about Annabelle out there, and most of them are not true. But I had many, many experiences with her. And I found it interesting because, like I said, I did theater. I did every single show between my sophomore and my senior year. And it wasn't until my senior year that I really started having experiences with her. And the thing that I realized was she doesn't really show herself to anyone unless she knows you, unless she has a rapport with you, unless she's seen you around a lot. In the way that the theater is built, we have our main stage and auditorium there on that first floor, and then our scene shop and our costume shop are all on the floor below. And there's actually a small slot going from the scene shop to the stage where you can slide scenery back and forth. That's what it was originally used for. They don't use it anymore. So it's a floor below. And unless you had spent a lot of time down there specifically, she didn't do anything to you. Now, Annabelle is not, once again, she's not a scary ghost. She's just kind of ornery. She likes to have fun. She likes to mess with you. And I had, especially my senior year, I had many, many experiences with her. And most of them started out, I would walk into the scene shop, and the way that it was set up, it had kind of a corridor, and the costume shop was there to your right. And then past the costume shop, the scene shop actually continued on. So there was a big part of the scene shop that you couldn't see. There was this blind corner.
Right.
And I would walk in and I would see a shadow walk around the corner. And I'm like, okay, who else is down here? And I'd walk back there and nobody was down there. I'm like, oh, that's weird. And this happened many, many times over a few months. And I was talking to one of my friends, and she worked on a lot of the costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me that the director told her when she was down in the costume shop not to put the keys on the counter, because if you put the keys on the counter and turn your back on them, they'll disappear. And Annabelle would take them and she would set them somewhere else in the costume shop.
Oh, that's funny.
And there was one instance in particular. And now that I think about it, this was actually my junior year, not my senior year. But I was down there. We were doing a show. My friend was working on the costumes during rehearsals, and her and I had a lot of scenes together. So what would happen is I would run down there, and I would get her. We would go up, we would do our scene, and then she would go back down. But every time she did that, she had to give the keys to the director. If she was not down in the costume shop, he had to have the keys in his hand. So I went down, and I said, "Hey, come on, our scene's up. We got to go." And she goes, "Okay." So she put she had a mannequin that didn't have a head. It had a pin cushion on the neck, that she was working on, and she, you know, stuck all of her pins in it.
Mm-hmm.
She locked up the costume shop. We ran upstairs. She handed the keys to the director. We went, we did our scene. She goes off stage. I go off stage. She gets the keys. And quicker than I would think possible, she's back up there and she says, John, you have to come look at this. It's like, okay. So I go down there and she opens up the costume shop and she goes, okay, so you know that the director had the keys. And it's like, yeah, of course. And you know that I wasn't down here long enough to do anything. It's like, okay. So we go in there, and on the mannequin, all of the pins had been taken out of the neck and had been placed in the mannequin between the shoulder blades.
Oh, my.
You know, and it's just little things like that. There was another time, you know, as I was telling you before, it's a lot of little things that I experienced with her. There was another time my senior year where I was actually a teacher's aide for the theater director. This was a new director. And I built a lot of the sets, and I went down to the shop and I had to cut this big piece in half with the table saw. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know how a table saw works, how you turn it on. You have to actually flip this switch up and then push a button
right
to turn it on. So it's, you know, it's pretty foolproof.
Yeah. So you don't cut your hand off.
Yeah, exactly. This was a very large sheet that I was supposed to be cutting. So I'm trying to balance it and trying to figure out how to turn the table saw on. And while I'm trying to balance it, the table saw flips on.
Ooh.
And I kind of lost it. It freaked me out. And I just went, Annabelle, knock it off. And
wow.
The table saw shut off.
Now, see, I've heard that before. People have come on the show and said, you know, I had this spirit, this ghost, whatever, pulling some kind of prank or something, and I told it to cut it out and it listened.
Yeah. And you know, I kind of had a talk with her. I was like, that wasn't funny. I don't know if you were trying to help me or what, but that freaked me out. Please don't do that again. So that was one of my more poignant experiences with her. But also in my senior year, we were doing a show, and in the show, part of the show is that this girl comes into this restaurant, and it's her first day in the big city, and she's taking pictures of everything. So she actually had one of the other cast members, she had his digital camera.
Right.
And, you know, this was back before digital cameras were very, very common. His family was pretty well off. And so it was a big deal to have a digital camera with us. And so during part of it, she would lean over and put her arm around me and then take a picture of us, you know. This was before the term selfie was coined.
Right.
So she'd take a picture of us, and we were going through the pictures later. This was a few days after the show closed, and there was one particular one from closing night that we flipped past that next to my head, so there was a girl and there was me, and then next to my head, there was this bright spot. There was this orb. And we're like, that's weird. You know, maybe it's a reflection of the theater lights.
Right.
And I was like, guys, there's no way that's the theater lights. And if you looked at it, because it was a green orb, but it had black in it, right? Very subtle, just darker shades in it. And I don't know if this is just me wanting to see it, but you could almost make out a face in the darker shades.
Huh.
And we all looked at each other and we're like, guys, that's Annabelle.
Wow.
And the next show that we did, one of the traditions is that we would go, before each show, we would go into the girls' dressing room. Someone would give a little pump you up speech, and then we would sing Queen's I Am the Champion.
Right.
And there was one night someone was taking pictures, and once again, we were going through the pictures after the show was done, and someone points and they go, who is that? And we were doing Annie Get Your Gun at the time. And so, you know, everybody's in like these Western dresses and all this. And we look, and there's this girl, but her face isn't in the picture. Like, her whole head isn't in the picture. You can just kind of see from the neck down. Like, you can see her neck and then her dress.
Mm.
And we're like, who is that? But none of us could identify. It was not a costume that was used in the show.
Huh.
It's not any clothing that anybody in the cast would be wearing. It wasn't a costume in the show. It was just this girl standing in the background, part of the cast, but you could not see her face.
Oh, that is strange. It seems like in both cases, kind of friendly ghosts. Didn't seem like you were totally freaked out by either one of them. Mm-hmm. So it just seems like they both were just, they were residents, just like they just happened to be dead.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and it's something that I've been fortunate, I guess, where I haven't really experienced anything malevolent with any spirits, but you know, it's, they're fun stories to tell, and it's really good memories for me. You know, it made high school very interesting.
You've always got a good story to tell. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for sharing those stories with us tonight on the Campfire.
Yes, sir.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that program as much as I did, and we'll be back next time with more Campfire stories. I hope you'll join us around our electronic campfire to sign up, regardless of where you are in the world and what time it is, because if you're international, we can work with you to set up a special time. Go over to jimherold.com/campfire. That's jimherold.com/campfire. And sign up. And I promise you, the feedback I've gotten, people said, hey, I was a little nervous about this, but you're not so mean. You're okay. So please sign up. Don't be afraid. We'd love to hear your story. We'll talk to you next time. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.